From Studio F, high atop the Feibusch Media World Domination headquarters back home in Rochester, New York. After being off last week, this is the Top of the Tower podcast. I'm your host, Scott Feibusch, and this week we will be telling you a little bit about the trip that we took last week down to New York City for the joint NAB New York and Audio Engineering Society conventions. We had a great time down there, and there's a lot to talk about from that. But before we get there, we need to talk a little bit about what's happening at the FCC and the decision that was made this week that was widely expected to get rid of the main studio rule. There is a lot of fear and uncertainty and doubt being spread about what's going to happen as a result of the main studio rule going away. My favorite, I think, was Alan Peterson's email today saying, "Hey, I got to the studio this morning and discovered there was no building there anymore, just three towers in the middle of a field and nobody there. Maybe getting rid of the main studio rule wasn't such a good idea." Obviously, things aren't going to happen that fast. Let's begin by revisiting what the main studio rule was. It has taken different forms over its many years of existence. Originally, it said a station had to have its studio located in its community of license. That got a little bit more complicated as we got into all these stations licensed to suburbs serving large cities, and it became absolutely impossible after consolidation, where you could easily have a cluster of co-owned stations in a market that could be licensed to two or three or four or five different communities within an area. So the rule, as it has existed for the last 20 years or so, has said that your main studio has to be located within one of the following. It has to be located either within your city of license or within a 25-mile radius of your city of license or within your principal community contour that your signal covers or within the principal community contour of any signal licensed to that same community as yours. Which in theory could have led to some interesting results. When that rule came about the principal community contour, for instance, people speculated that because a couple of New York City AM stations, 660 and 880, have this coverage that extends down the Connecticut coast along Long Island Sound, that you could take any New York City radio station, even a really small one, and say, "Hey, our main studio is now going to be 150 miles away in New London, Connecticut," simply because 660 and 880 reached there. Obviously, A, that never happened, and B, it would have created some weird inequities because it would have meant that if you had a cluster that also included, say, 103.5 WKTU, which is very much a New York City radio station, it couldn't have had its studios in New London because it's licensed to Lake Success, New York. So, little bits of weirdness there. Leaving that quirk aside, however, there were still some oddities to the main studio rule. For instance, it never required that stations actually do any amount of broadcasting from that legal main studio. All that they were required to have in the main studio was the public file, which is now predominantly going online, the ability to originate programming, which could be something as simple as a POTS codec that you could dial up into the transmitter or into a studio elsewhere. And that's about it. You were never required to have programming staff there. You weren't required to do news from there. You weren't required to be covering community events from there. All that there had to be was simply a room, a physical facility, and two full-time employees. So it's always been kind of a weird rule. And that's where some of the arguments for eliminating it come around. Because the argument is, if this rule doesn't actually require you to have any of this community stuff in your legal main studio, why have a legal main studio in the first place? The FCC has always granted waivers for non-commercial stations to not have a legal main studio in their community of license. They've understood, for instance, that if you are, say, the WAMC Northeast Public Radio Network, that it probably isn't going to be financially feasible for you to have a network of a dozen signals covering everywhere from Remsen, New York, down to Danbury, Connecticut, and have actual main studios in each of those and still be able to economically provide the programming that you do as a nonprofit. So those waivers have been very common for non-commercial stations. Then, of course, you get to EMF and the KLOV and Air One networks, where EMF figured out that if the FCC would grant a waiver for a public radio network to have studios in a different location, they would also grant a waiver for someone like EMF to have studios in Sacramento and transmitters all over the country, even in very large markets like New York City and Providence and Hartford and Philadelphia, none of which had this main studio. Okay, then what if you're the local religious operator? What if, for instance, you're Bill Blount in New England? Disclaimer, Bill Blount is a client of Five Bush Media. But what if you're Bill Blount, and most of the programming that you're running is long-form preaching that's coming from somewhere else that is running off of a server? Does it really matter if that server is physically located in Milford, Connecticut, or if it's physically located at headquarters in New Hampshire? Is it going to provide any more service to the people of Milford, Connecticut, or is it just an expense on a relatively small broadcaster to have to maintain these local studios when he's only got one station each in the New Haven market, in the Hartford market, in the Providence market? So there were inequities there that probably needed to be addressed. So let's talk about some of the fear of what's going to happen, because there's a lot of talk going on now. If you read the Facebook threads and the message boards, a lot of talk about now everybody could just do national programming from anywhere and you don't need a local studio anywhere. Well, you can already do that. That's the thing. We have already seen examples from just about every corner of how any of these things could have happened under the old rules. iHeart, for instance, is always a favorite target of these things, and there are certainly markets. I can think of a smallish iHeart market not far from here where there are five stations and I believe just one local morning show and nothing else local coming out of those studios. All of that programming, whether it's something like the Bobby Bones Country Morning Show or whether it's something like Elvis Duran on a Top 40 station, it's already coming from somewhere else. It's already being programmed nationally, and that's been completely legal under the existing main studio rules. Nothing is going to change as a result of that. You could have done that last week. You could have done it last year. You can still do it now. Radio Disney, now we're going back 10, 15 years to when Radio Disney was trying to be a national programming service over a whole bunch of small AM stations. Yes, they had to maintain small offices where you had one or two promotions and management people and maybe somebody doing a little bit of local ad sales. Local Radio Disney programming never originated from offices in Boston or from Providence or from New York City. It always came initially from Dallas and then eventually from Burbank. It was always a national programming service. It was always completely legal under the main studio rules. So to assume that all of this stuff is suddenly going to happen just because this main studio rule has changed, I think ignores the fact that it was already happening. It could already happen. Having said that, there are arguments that some of the structure of what we know as local radio, especially in a corporate cluster environment, may indeed change. One of the things that we talked about at the NAB show and at AES was a lot of discussion about virtualized studios, the idea that you still need a soundproofed room somewhere with a console in order to do radio isn't necessarily the case anymore. There's all kinds of stuff that you can do now with a broadband connection and a headset mic and maybe a tablet that you couldn't have done a few years ago. So yes, some of the studio stuff that has had to happen in a studio was going to go away anyway. And again, all of this was legal anyway, even before now. You never had to have the morning show in the studio. You never had to have the news guy in the studio. Anybody who was working for Clear Channel a decade ago doing local radio news knows that the newscast for Rochester was already coming from Albany sometimes, or vice versa. These things happen. But at the same time, any company that has local ad sales still is going to, I think, want to maintain some sort of a local presence, whether that be at least a sales office where there are salespeople, whether there are promotions people, whether there is a morning show or an afternoon show at least coming out of one studio. I don't think those are going to go away so quickly as long as even the big clusters are still depending to some extent on local ad revenue. There is still a value to a local presence. And then, of course, you get into the little guys, because as you get into the little guys, nobody is getting rid of their studio behind plate glass on Main Street if they are the local station in a small market that everybody is depending on to have the mayor stop by one day and the head of the Chamber of Commerce another day. You want to have a main studio for that. You need to have a main studio for that. And if you are the local guy, whether it's Dan Fisher in Batavia or whether it's Lloyd Lane down the road in Warsaw, you want to have someplace locally where all that can happen. So I don't see that going away quite so quickly either. So the bottom line, sure, there are going to be some changes. Technology was going to bring around some changes anyway in the way that radio studios were devised. And yes, you will see some larger groups trying to take liberties with more of this now that the main studio rule has gone away. You will certainly, for instance, in the case of iHeart, see the little studio down the road from here in Canandaigua go away, because it never served a purpose. It served two FM stations that were just a hair over 25 miles outside of Rochester. Couldn't quite have a legal main studio in downtown Rochester. So there's this little storefront that no programming ever originates from that just has a couple of people rotating in and out of it over a couple of days a week. Yeah, that's going to go away. Yes, you will see a couple of groups maybe trying to experiment with a little more consolidation. But again, this has mostly been legal for quite a while, and if it hadn't happened already, why do we think it's going to happen immediately right now? Love to hear your input on that. Get in touch with us, whether it's commenting right here on the blog post on the FiveBush.com website, or whether it's dropping us an email, scott@FiveBush.com. Let me know what you think. We'll share some of your comments in next week's edition of Top of the Tower. Still ahead, some coverage of NAB and AES in New York. First, a reminder that the Top of the Tower podcast is brought to you by FiveBush Media, and in particular, the 2018 Tower Site Calendar. It's here, it's real, it's back from the printer, it is starting to ship out to those of you who have already ordered it. It's available for you. If you haven't yet, we'll ship it out to you in just a matter of days. It's got wonderful full-color pictures of broadcast facilities all over the place, not just the Northeast, plus stories and historical dates, lots of great stuff in there. Yours at FiveBush.com. Find it right there on the front page. Back at home. The Top of the Tower podcast continues. I'm Scott Feibusch here in Studio F, but we broke away from Studio F, and in fact, we weren't with you here at all last week because of all the traveling we were doing, especially down in New York City for the NAB New York show and the Audio Engineering Society convention. Our thanks to David Bialik, who was a guest here on the podcast, for the great sessions that he put together at AES. We had a great time, for instance, hearing from the audio crew of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert about everything they do and how they put that show together, and also a visit to the World Trade Center broadcast facility. We'll talk more about that on an upcoming installment of Top of the Tower. We had the chance on and off the floor to talk to some broadcasters about what they saw. We start with a conversation with Nick Straka. Nick is a contract engineer from New Jersey who takes care of stations big and small. He talked to us right on the floor of the convention. What have you been seeing walking around here?
I've been seeing a lot of audio over IP, video over IP, bonded video over LTE. It's really interesting where things are moving. With 15 years ago, you would have multi-channel snakes everywhere, and now it's not. It's a piece of Cat 6 connecting things. It's a virtual AES 67 network that can run in two different cities. It's really amazing how you can tie things together now versus what we used to do when we started out in this.
I forget sometimes. I go into an older analog studio now and you see the whole rabbit's nest of wiring under there, rat's nest of wiring under there. I think, wow, we did this?
That's what I do now, is I rip out a lot of rat's nests. I'm a rat's nest exterminator at this point because I run into so many studios where, you know, it's was put in the 70s or 80s, added on to. No one ever subtracted when you added on with that because, well, we might need this channel. Leave it here. But it's not labeled, so you don't really know what it is. So it's just peeling it all back and showing people that, okay, it might cost you a tiny bit more of the same, but your functionality is so much different now. You want GPIO? Fine. It's running on the same cable. I don't need to run separate cables. I don't need to punch it down. It saves me work.
Well, sure. And it future-proofs it a little bit, too, because if you change something out, it's still the same Cat 5 or Cat 6, right?
Same Cat 5 or Cat 6. I mean, you can even run it over fiber. And then just the flexibility of something goes wrong. I take care of over 20 radio stations. I can't be everywhere at once. But with my phone and my laptop, I can. This channel seems weird. It sounds weird. Hang on, let me log in. Let me check it. Oh, you got the compressor set too high. There, it's fixed.
And your clients run the gamut. I mean, you've got everything from fairly high-dollar university operations to, you know, what was a daytime or AM that's running translators now. How does this translate at the lower end of things?
I think it's scalable is the thing where all of this technology is great, because if you don't need a lot of it, you can still do it, you can still get the benefit, but it's not that expensive to do compared to going back 25 years and buying a BMX3. That would have cost you $40,000 then. What you can do for $40,000 now is insane. And I have clients that are, I have LPFMs and I have big high dollar clients. and everywhere in between. And what I'm seeing is that you can scale this for them, and everyone can be on the same technological curve for their budget.
What products specifically have caught your eye here?
I mean, obviously the Wheatstone consoles. Every time I see them, they're very functional, they're very good, but they're also very nice-looking boards. And I've been spending time at the Lavo booth, which don't really get a chance to see a lot of them in the States. And they have a lot of very interesting technology with auto mix for talk shows, and it seems to work, which is, there's been a lot of auto mix attempts that haven't worked.
There's definitely some neat stuff that we don't see as much of in the U.S. I'm looking forward, I'm headed to Europe pretty soon, hoping to get into a few facilities there and see what they're using that we don't have here. What are some of the things that we can learn from some of these European and Asian companies that the U.S. manufacturers don't necessarily think about offering?
One of the things I notice about the European style or motif is it's clean. It's all very clean. We like to put a lot of buttons on things in America. Look at all these buttons. Look at this. Wow. The European, it's like, here it is. There's a few functional buttons. They can do different things, but it's very clean. It's a very simple layout. I think for training in the university, like a student-run station situation, or community volunteers, it's probably easier to train them on that than something that looks overwhelming and terrifying with 80,000 lit-up buttons.
Oh, agreed. I've been in some of these places where they've got, you know, a live music mixing board that they're trying to use for on air. It's like, who would even want to try to instruct somebody in that?
It's just too many things to go wrong. And we can lock things out. It's a good thing. It saves me work, and it saves the client headaches.
On, off, maybe level.
Yeah. On, off, level, maybe pan left, right if you want to get fancy with it.
Out in the field, what are you working on lately?
Just finished a 10-kilowatt transmitter upgrade for WFJS. So just got that done. Working on, with Rutgers University, a total revamp of their studios. That's probably coming up next summer, but we're just starting the process. And then just a few maintenance things right now. It's kind of quiet for November as far as the big projects go.
All right, Nick, thanks so much.
Thank you, Scott.
See you out in the field at some point. And while we were on the floor of the convention, we also got together with our good friend Tom Ray. Tom is another veteran New York City engineer. He was the chief engineer for many years at WOR, oversaw their transmitter move in the Jersey Meadowlands, including the demolition of their 1967 vintage towers, also oversaw their studio move. Now he contracts with a whole bunch of stations, big and small, around the region, and also handles a lot of the alternative broadcast inspection program for New York State. We caught up with him right by the main entrance to the NAB New York Hall.
What's going on right now with NAB in New York that people who couldn't be here should know about?
Well, there's a lot of things. This event is primarily, at least on the NAB side, is primarily video, which is very interesting, especially with the convergence going on in radio. I've had several morning shows ask me recently, how do we get on online with video? Can you come in and build a studio? Well, of course, that's easy. Providing you know video. but I'm actually on my way over to the Comrex booth now to see what they've got that's new and exciting. But this is it's a great place just to mingle, to bump into Scott Feibusch, for example. I didn't know you were here. You didn't know I was here. Here we are. Just to see what's new and exciting out there. And, you know, you've got the luncheon coming up. We've got the New York State Broadcasters EAS meeting, a whole bunch of stuff. And if you go over to the AES side, that's always interesting over there. Their sessions are great.
It's wild over there. That floor always intrigues me because it's this weird mix of, you know, real high-end audiophile stuff and then recording studio stuff, then a little radio here and there.
And that's always amazed me because you go over there and you get the guys who talk about the high-end audio, and now we're looking at the broadcast processor for AM, and it's like, wait a minute, you were just talking about real high-end audio. But, you know, it's a great place to learn. No matter what you do at an event like this, you come to learn. You come to see what's there.
What should people know right now about what's going on with EAS in the state?
We had a meeting about 2 weeks ago with the state. They are in the process of revamping their internal workings, and it's going to be delivered via the CAP system. And there were some interesting things. They were under the impression that there would be a limit on the character amount for text for television. It was like, well, no. So they're working on a whole bunch of things to make it easier internally with scripts. New York is a what was the phrase they used? It's a state where each town governs its own. So each county and each town do have the ability to get into the system via CAP.
That's a lot of towns.
It is, and it's a lot of counties. And you stop to think for a minute and go, well, wait a minute, boy, there's a potential to have all kinds of stuff going out that you don't want on the air. They're setting guidelines. They're actually setting scripts for, you know, it's kind of like fill in the blank. This is, you know, so-and-so with such-and-such an emergency, and here's the pertinent information you need to know, so no one will be kind of on their own. Which is good because, they, you know, for years the state used a satellite system that worked and didn't work. And with I think it was the last time it was on AMC 19, which or AMC 9, that kind of got blown out of orbit. And they haven't revised it yet. And everybody's wondering what's going on. Well, they're working towards CAP, which is good. I work with New York City. New York City's working towards CAP. Matter of fact, I'll be meeting with them next week because they called me yesterday with questions on what the state was doing. But it's all good. It's all leading to better things and better distribution of information.
Feels like it's coming together. It feels like everything worked well with the NPT a couple of weeks ago.
It did. And you know what I found interesting on that with most of it? I had 20 stations I had to report for. Out of the 20 stations, only one grabbed it from CAP first. Everybody else. And it wasn't like, if you took a look, usually these boxes pull the CAP server every 30 seconds. It was like 2 minutes, 3 minutes later, it got it from CAP, and I didn't understand that, but the one up on the Canadian border got it from CAP first. I don't get it. But, hey, it worked. The daisy chain worked. It worked like a champ.
You've got some interesting situations because you've got a cluster up in Watertown that's feeding Canada. Are you getting Canadian emergency information into that, too?
No, the Watertown stations don't monitor Canada. However, I do have a client that is LMAing a U.S.-based station from Canada. And up there, they do grab the Canadian stuff, but they have a US EAS box at the transmitter site on the US side. So it's interesting. And what's interesting about that station is of course, what some people may not know is in Canada, you've got certain rules. For example, no pharmaceutical spots, bare aspirin, not going to happen. The music content, I think, has to be 60% Canadian. That figure I may be wrong on. But they're LMAing a U.S. station. They can do what they want for the Canadian market.
All the Viagra ads you can take.
There you go.
And on that note, Tom Ray, thanks for being with us on Top of the Tower podcast.
Anytime, Scott.
And toward the end of the convention, we caught up with our friend Daniel Hyatt. Daniel is based out of Denver. He has his finger in a little bit of everything out there, from station ownership to telephone systems, to contract engineering. He's also the director of engineering for Max Media's radio stations. We sat down with him and some other broadcast friends over lunch at one of the most historic dive bars in New York City, Nancy Whiskey, down in the West Village.
So it was one of your first trips to Eastern broadcast facilities. I got to hang around with you for some of it. What have you seen that's impressed you?
Well, I think that the level of commitment and dedication from the broadcast engineers on this half of the country is something to be admired. I think that the folks out here are very creative and forward-thinking, and it's just something from a studio application perspective and also from a transmitter perspective that I think we can all learn quite a few lessons from. I could be in politics.
You could.
Okay. Lots of synergy between the engineers.
It is, yeah. Well, nobody punched each other, so we're doing okay there.
That's a good start. Facility-wise, what have you learned? What are you going to take back with you?
Well, I think, with a lot of consolidation over the years, and I think with the limited studio space I've seen in New York City, it's obviously something that we can all learn. A lot of us are very fortunate to have a lot more studio space, a lot more floor space for all the different applications. And I think by learning that the guys here can do some amazing things with that limited amount of space and limited facilities, that we can do a lot more with all the opportunity we have in the Midwest.
And everybody's doing it on a budget, or trying to.
Everybody is doing it on a budget, but, technology is starting to come into play now. We're seeing a lot more of the virtual machine applications, so we're not having as much hardware deployed in the studios. Things are a little easier to run. You don't have to have 27 guys doing 27 different jobs. You got three guys that can do 27 jobs. Might kill them, but they're getting it done. So a lot more of the computer end of things continuing to move forward.
You always have 17 million things going at once. What's on your plate when you get home to Denver?
I'm going to sleep. No, not really. Actually, I get off the airplane. I go to the nightclub. I'm going to DJ for 5 hours. Get done at 2 a.m. Then I'm going to go home, repack, start a corporate gig at 7:30 in the morning, DJ that the entire day, pack up, do a corporate again in a corporate event in the evening, wrap that up at midnight, then drive 7 hours to Santa Fe, DJ a wedding, drive 7 hours back to Denver, and hit home plate at Max Media at 8 a.m. on Monday.
Anybody else that think you're putting me on, you want to know you're telling me the truth.
Absolutely. I would not lie. You can follow me on Facebook and see. I might even live stream the whole thing.
Let's talk phone systems for a minute, because it's been a big thing now that you've got going. People are spending a lot of money with old line telephone companies. They don't have to be, right?
Well, absolutely. And with the advantages of SIP, Session Initiated Protocol, we're really starting to see a lot of cost savings. And one thing my company has been able to do is take the advantages of SIP, where we can essentially bypass the service provider, chop them out of the equation, and find new operational savings. We can take those same savings, attain new and better equipment with the savings wrapped into a lease, and actually have a tax-deductible investment. So now you're eliminating capital costs, you're eliminating operational costs, and you're actually getting an upgrade in equipment for your facility.
Where do people find you?
Daniel@unitedptp.com for unitedpointtopoint.com. You can always hit me up on Facebook or Instagram. I actually don't have a Twitter, believe it or not. And, hey, you can always call me. Most people are really tight about giving out their phone number, but, hey, I like when people call me. So you can call me on my cell phone. That'd be great. 303-931-3010, 303-931-3010.
And judging by the way your phone was blowing up when you were traveling around Connecticut, people do.
They do indeed. I recently made a significant investment into a battery backup for my telephone. So, you know, just like everybody has to have those battery backups for their facilities, all I do is carry batteries in my pockets.
And that'll do it for this week's edition of the Top of the Tower podcast. A reminder, we are brought to you by Fibush Media. Fibush Media helps make your broadcast signal get a little bigger, go a little farther, and stay compliant with FCC rules. We're here to help you with station brokerage, translator applications, and all kinds of good things that help make your radio station function better. Reach out to us at fibushmedia.com and see how we can help you. And the Tower Site Calendar, available now at fibush.com. Back with much more from NAB New York and the AES Show in next week's edition. We want to hear from you also what you think about the main studio rule. Get in touch with us here at fibush.com. I'm Scott Fibush. That'll do it for this week. Thanks for being with us.